ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Third Canto, Chapter 21, Text 45. Pravishya,
Pravishya,
Tat,
Tat,
Tirtha,
Tirtha,
Bodham,
Bodham,
Adi Rajaha,
Adi Rajaha,
Sahatmajaha,
Sahatmajaha,
Dadarsha,
Dadarsha,
Munim,
Munim,
Asinam,
Asinam,
Tasmin,
Tasmin,
Bhuta,
Bhuta,
Bhutashanam,
Bhutashanam,
Pravishyatat Tirtha Varam,
Pravishyatat Tirtha Varam,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Tadarsha Munim Asinam,
Tadarsha Munim Asinam,
Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam,
Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam,
Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Tadarsha Munim Asinam,
Tadarsha Munim Asinam,
Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam,
Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam,
Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Tadarsha Munim Asinam,
Tadarsha Munim Asinam,
Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam,
Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam,
Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Tadarshamunim Asinam, Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam, Pravishyata Tirtha Varam,
Adi Raja Sahatmajaha,
Tadarshamunim Asinam, Tasmin Bhuta Bhutashanam.
And there's texts 46 and 47. Vidyotamanam vapusha tapasugra yujachiram natikshamam bhagavata snigdha pangavalokanat tadhyahriptatmata kala piyusha shravanenacha pramshun padmapalashaksham Jatilam Chiravasasam Upasang Shritya Malinam Yatarhanam Sanskritam Pravishya
Entering
Tat
That
Tirtha Varam
Best of Sacred Places
Adi Rajaha
The First Monarch
Swayambhuva Monarch
Saha
Atmajaha,
along with his daughter,
Dadarsha,
saw
Munim,
the sage,
Asinam,
sitting,
Tasmin,
in the hermitage,
Bhuta,
being offered.
Being offered oblations.
Bhuta
Ashanam.
The sacred fire.
I guess we'll do the rest.
Vidyotamanam.
shining brilliantly.
Shining brilliantly.
Vapusha.
By his body.
Tapasi. In penance.
In penance.
Ugra.
Terribly.
Yuja. Engaged in yoga.
Engaged in yoga.
Chiram. For a long time.
For a long time.
Na. Adikshamam.
Adikshamam.
Very emaciated.
Very emaciated.
Bhagavataha
of the Lord.
Snigdha, affection. Abhanga,
sidelong.
Avalokana,
from the glance.
Tat, of him. Vyahrita,
from the words.
Amritakala,
moonlight.
Piyusha,
the nectar.
Shravanena,
by hearing.
Cha,
and.
Prangshun,
tall.
Padma,
lotus flower.
Palasha,
petal.
Aksham,
eyes.
Jatilam,
matted
locks.
Chiravasasam,
having rags for clothes.
Having rags for clothes.
Upasanshritya, having approached.
Having approached.
Malinam,
soiled.
Yata,
like.
Arhanam,
gem.
Asamskritam,
unpolished.
Entering that most sacred spot with his daughter, and going near the sage, the first monarch, Swayambhuva Manu, saw the sage sitting in his hermitage, having just propitiated the sacred fire by pouring oblations into it. His body shone most brilliantly, though he had engaged in austere penance for a long time. He was not emaciated, for the Lord had cast his affectionate sidelong glance upon him, and he had also heard the nectar flowing from the moon-like words of the Lord. The sage was tall, his eyes were large like the petals of a lotus, and he had matted locks on his head. He was clad in rags. Swayambhuva Manu approached and saw him to be somewhat soiled, like an unpolished gem. Purport. Here are some descriptions of a brahmachari yogi. In the morning, the first duty of a brahmachari seeking spiritual elevation is bhuta-bhutasana, to offer sacrificial oblations to the Supreme Lord. Those engaged in brahmacharya cannot sleep until 7 or 9 o'clock in the morning. They must rise early in the morning, at least 1.5 hours before the sun rises, and offer oblations, or in this age, they must chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna. As referred to by Lord Chaitanya, Kalo nascheva 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 katir anyata. There is no other alternative, no other alternative, no other alternative in this age to chanting the holy name of the Lord. The brahmachari must rise early in the morning and after placing himself should chant the holy name of the Lord. From the very features of the sage, it appeared that he had undergone great austerities. That is the sign of one observing brahmacharya, the vow of celibacy. If one lives otherwise, it will be manifest in the lust visible in his face and body. The word vityottamanam indicates that the brahmacharya feature showed in his body. That is the certificate that one has undergone great austerity in yoga. A drunkard or smoker or sexmonger can never be eligible to practice yoga. Generally, yogis look very skinny because of their not being comfortably situated. But Kardama Muni was not emaciated, for he had seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Here the word snigdha-panga-va-lokanat means that he was fortunate enough to see the Supreme Lord face to face. He looked healthy because he had directly received the nectarian sound vibrations from the lotus lips of the Personality of Godhead. Similarly, one who hears the transcendental sound vibration of the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, also improves in health. We have actually seen that many brahmacharis and grihasthas connected with the International Society for Krishna Consciousness have improved in health, and luster has come to their faces. It is essential that a brahmachari engaged in spiritual advancement look very healthy and lustrous. The comparison of the sage to an unpolished gem is very appropriate. Even if a gem just taken from a mine looks unpolished, the luster of the gem cannot be stopped. Similarly, although Kardama was not properly dressed and his body was not properly cleansed, his overall appearance was gem-like.
Tirtavaram Adi Raja Sahatmajana Tadarsha Muniam Asinam Tasmin Bhuta Bhutasham Vidyotamanam Bhakusha Tapasyugra Yujakshiram Nati Kshamam Bhagavata Snigtha Pangava Lokanat Tadvyahritamrita Kala Piyusha Shravanenaja Ramshunam Padma Palashaksham Jati Lam Chida Vasasam Upasanshritya Malinam Itaradhanam Asanskritam.
One time, Śrīla Prabhupāda. Our artist, Jadarani Dasi, Prabhupada's disciple, had painted a picture of Narad Muni. And Prabhupada, she had taken guidance from some of the great masters in Renaissance art. And so she, in the Renaissance artists were very much concerned with being faithfully portraying the human body. They would study the musculature of the body and the all the particular features of the anatomy to get it accurate. And so while painting Narad Muni, she followed some of the examples of the great masters. And upon seeing the painting, Srila Prabhupada strongly disapproved. Narad Muni was muscular. Prabhupada said that he looked like a meat eater. Not like a brahmachari. A brahmachari is not distinguished by his athletic physique, but by the glow of his face, the glow of his presence, and by a more subdued physical, healthy but not Olympic body. So here, Kardava Muni is described with similar brahmachari features. Pravishyata Tirthavaram Adi Raja Sahatmaja. The Swayambhuva Manu entered the Tirthasthan along with his daughter, and the Darsha Muni Masinam Tasmin Bhuta Hutasham. He saw the sage seated in the morning, Bhuta Hutasham. The offering oblations into the sacred fire. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also we find in the beginning, Te kada tu muniya, then pratur hutahutagne, satkutam sutamasina, kupachturi divani. The sages finished their morning duties and then they sat down with Sutta Goswami and began their questioning. So Prabhupada points out that this is brahmachari life. I was recently, not too long ago, at Oxford University, where we have some devotees. And they were describing the ways of the students there. And typically the students stay up till all hours of the night, either studying or doing something else. And then they get up in time for their first class, which might be 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. They get up in time for their first class and they rush out. And this is the premier educational institution in the United Kingdom. And these are the students. Totally disqualified, according to the Vedic way of life. What is that? Svapna bhavatasya yoga bhavati dukkha yukta hara viharascha yukta cheshtasya kamasya yukta svapna bhavatasya yoga bhavati dukkha. This is the yogi. He doesn't eat too much, he doesn't sleep too much, he doesn't sleep too little. He's not a sportsman, but he takes care of the body as much as required for Krishna service. And Yogo Bhavati Dukha, he gets free from all miseries by living a balanced way of life. When the food is described in the mode of goodness also. What is that? I use sattva bala rogya, priti, sukha vivarana. Food which is gives strength and happiness, and which is nourishing, and which is fatty, wholesome, hridya, pleasing to the heart, sthira, gives. This is food in the mode of goodness. Not the food, what is that? Ati, 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 ati in the next. Katvamla, lavanatyushna, tiksha, ruksha, vidai. Then? Shokadukamaya prada. Food which is. Shokadukamaya prada. The food which is in the mode of goodness is too salty, too sour, too hot, too sweet, too everything. Sensational. Everything's supposed to be a sensation. So this is in the mode of passion and dukkha shoka maya prada. It creates misery and lamentation. An actual disease. And then in the mode of ignorance, puch chishtam api cha medyam, bhojanam tamasa priyam, food which is rejected in every sense, stale, yatayamam gatarasam, puti paryushitam chaya, old, stinky, stale, leftover. This is food. In the modern, this is called modern life also, especially in the Western countries. Why fresh vegetables? Well, you can get them from a can, or you can get them frozen so that they're 2 years old and still good. Or cheese, which has been aged till it's nice and green and moldy. You can smell it a mile away. So this is food in the mode of ignorance. So those who are in the mode of goodness, simple, healthy, fresh, not too much of anything, balanced, this is suitable for the yogis. Not too much, not too little. Satisfying, but not crazy. And then getting up early in the morning, time for the Mangal Arati, Brahma Muhurta time. Because their business is spiritual realization. And for spiritual realization, the most advantageous time begins before sunrise. Not burning midnight oil. Of course, for Krishna service, the yogis or devotees may also get up at midnight, Prabhupada did, writing his books. But that doesn't mean that he got up in time for his first class at 11 o'clock the next morning. He simply slept less. So, vidyotamanam Prabhushad. He was effulgent. That's the sign of a saintly person. His body will be effulgent. And we see this sometimes. We meet saintly devotees, saintly persons. And just by looking at them, you see they're bright. Even Prabhupada was very pleased that some priest remarked that Prabhupada's disciples were bright-faced. That's the sign of a devotee or a spiritual person. Face is the index of mind. And sometimes you see people in the mode of ignorance, they look haunted. No, they do. They look haunted, twisted, miserable. And people in the mode of passion look lusty. I remember one time I bought an airline ticket from a travel agent, recommended to me actually by one of our temple presidents. And the man was a cheater actually. He quoted one price and then charged another price and wouldn't accept a peso less than the outrageous price he demanded. And because I had to fly the next day, I had no choice. And he came to the temple to collect his payment. And it was like, almost like a movie, watching this man. When he got his money, his face just... lit up, and he like entered a trance. As he's counting his beloved money, rupee by rupee. Because that's the symptom of a person in the mode of passion. What can I get? What can I get? I got something. And you could just see his face, the intimate, loving relationship between him and his paisa. So the persons who are in the mode of passion, they have anxiety and competition and all of that, and desire, intense desire, written all over their face. Deceit. That's another expression. Prabhupada quoted one expression, face is the index of mind. Another expression is written all over your face. Right? When someone's a liar, you say that. Even like if your mother sees that you're lying, she says, oh, it's written all over your face. So that these modes of nature are written all over people's faces. So Vidyoktaman, the Kardamom Muni, was seriously engaged in spiritual practice, and therefore he was effulgent, naturally brilliant. Vidyoktamanam Bhakushad, his whole body. Tapasyuga Yujali Chiram. He'd been undergoing tapasya for a long time, Ati Chiram. Ugra Yujam, serious tapasya. But Nati Kshamam, he wasn't emaciated. Sometimes we see the picture of the Jain saints, and that's their special feature, that they're like, just the bones are there and hardly any flesh, emaciated. Because Ugra tapasya, they undergo severe austerity. So here also, Kardamuni underwent severe austerity, but not Dikshana. He wasn't emaciated. He looked normal, not soul skinny. Bhagavata snigdha panga avalokanat. Why? Because he'd gotten the loving glances of the Lord, Snigdha Pangavalokanat, and Tadya Haritamrita Kala Piyusha Shravanincha. He'd been getting the loving glances of the Lord, and he'd been drinking the nectar, Amrita Kala, of the words of the Lord, the moon-like nectar of the Lord's words. And therefore, he was living on that. Prabhupada told the story of some yogi who was, anyway, like that. I don't want to take the story out of context, but a little bit of energy someplace, and they can live on that. There's a little light at a distance, a little fire, a little something. They can go by that energy. So he wasn't eating a lot. He wasn't very comfortable. But he was drinking this nectar of hearing about the Lord. And he was being bathed in the transcendental glances of the Lord. The Brikshit Maharaj also told Sukadev Goswami that I'm not feeling exhausted because I'm drinking this nectar, Harikathamrita, the nectar of Krishna Katha. Not eating, not drinking, one would naturally be exhausted. But he was drinking the nectar of Harikatha, and therefore he was feeling fresh and vibrant. So that was the special feature of Kardam Muni. Receiving the mercy of Krishna by hearing about Krishna and by seeing the glances of the Lord. That means deeply absorbed in meditation. Damshun Padma Palak Palashaksham Jatilam Chira Vasasam Pusam Shmitya Malinam Yatarhanam Asanskritam. So he was not opulently dressed. Sometimes brahmacharis or pujaris, you go to a temple and they're the sharpest dressers in town. Right? They've got a silk kurta and they're like, you know, bright yellow or bright orange, and you know, in case you have any trouble knowing who the pujari is, here I am. The smartest looking dude in town. Quite spiffy. Sometimes their hair is real. But here, Kardam Muni wasn't sportily dressed. He was wearing rags, really, just worn out, whatever. But he was a diamond in the rough. The Swayambhuva Manu, who's also a highly qualified devotee, could see that this is not an ordinary person, nor is he one of these show bottle sages, show bottle brahmachari. Show bottle brahmachari, Prabhupada explained that there's a certain class of woman immortalized in some Bollywood epics who thinks it's a great benediction to have a child by a holy man, by a sannyasi. If you can bear the child of a sannyasi, then it's a great blessing, a great benediction. And sometimes such women go to a sacred place like Rishikesh or Haridwar so that they can search out such a holy man and have such a blessed child. And there are some men who know this. So they dress up as holy men. They go to Rishikesh or Haridwar. And you know the rest of the story. So Prabhupada gave this as the example of the cheaters and the cheated. They want to be cheated, and so some cheater is there. But here, Kardamu Muni was genuine. Swayambhu Manu was in a different position. He was a great king. He would have been very well dressed and very strong, Kshatriya or Kshatriya physique. But he could see Kardamu Muni was certainly a great sage just by seeing. Brahmacharis rise early in the morning and chant the holy name of the Lord, and the sage, we're not doing sacrificial fires. That's not our focus, but the fire of the holy name of Krishna is our shelter. The Brahmacharis rise early in the morning, chant Hare Krishna. They keep shape fits, and Prabhupada, when he'd see devotees again with beards and mustaches and all this, Prabhupada would take it as a sign that Maya was growing back. Sometimes he would call them hippie seeds, you don't know. And he'd like to see the devotees clean shaven, shaved head, shaved face, like that. Sometimes we see now that it's a style for sort of cut profile as a kirtaniya, big hair, as Prabhupada would call them, beard and hairs, and you know, doing the sadhu look. That wasn't in accord with what Prabhupada expected to see. Prabhupada expected to see clean shaven and pure hearted. And not too fat. One time, one devotee, one brahmachari, was approaching Prabhupada for sannyas or being recommended for sannyas. Prabhupada said, he's not fit, he's fat. Generally, of course, some people will be bigger, some people will be smaller. But if someone is corpulent, eating big and sort of spreading his physical presence, that's not a very hopeful sign for brahmacharya life. But brahmacharya naturally, because he's regulated, so he won't be very fat. Shouldn't be too skinny either. Prabhupada, I've told maybe before, but when Prabhupada saw me in 1968 in New York, and said, why you are so skinny? There was some other devotee, Prabhupada said he was a good size for a brahmachari. And not too fat, not too skinny. And Prabhupada mentions here that by being engaged in Krishna consciousness, the devotees become healthy. You see, especially in places like New York, There'll be a whole floor of a building dedicated to stationary bicycles, and you see all these people doing all these exercises because they're sitting all day engaged in some useless inactivity. But they're very health conscious, so they want to eat this, they want to eat that, they don't want to eat this, they don't want to eat that, and they want to do exercise and do all of that. And their focus is the body, the mind, the emotions, and they have no higher sense. But the devotees, their focus is Krishna, their focus is the spiritual world, their focus is on the adhyatmic platform, the spiritual platform. But automatically, because they live in the mode of goodness, because they live a regulated life, so they're naturally healthy, naturally healthy. That's not to say that a devotee never becomes diseased, that if someone is diseased, then he's disqualified from spiritual life, or he must be doing something contrary to spiritual principles, otherwise his body would be immortal. The body will sooner or later fail, or sometimes it will fail. But so much of disease is due to anxiety, or uncleanliness, or overeating. Prabhupada ascribed disease mainly to these three causes. Anxiety, you know, even, you know, if a person's anxious, he says, I can't eat. Or if he's in too much anxiety, he can't chew, his mind is all over the place, and even if he eats, it turns to some sort of inner anxiety in semi-nutritional form. It becomes poisoned, actually, because his mind is poisoned. Or they actually develop eating disorders. They're in such anxiety that they don't eat. Or the other way, they're in such anxiety that they eat mindlessly and eat all rubbish. So anxiety itself, even anxiety, it causes every kind of, all kinds of diseases. There's a whole department of medicine called psychosomatic medicine, which deals sometimes with imaginary diseases, but also with diseases that people cause for themselves just because their mind is so disturbed that it causes disease. So anxiety and uncleanliness that everybody knows. You don't wash your hands before eating. Even they have to have signs in restaurants that employees should wash their hands after using the toilet, because if the signs aren't there, the employees won't. So that's a simple thing. Everything should be, where food is prepared should be clean. Everything, brahmacharya means clean, devotee means clean, brahminical life means clean. Because so much disease comes just from being dirty. Anxiety and uncleanliness and overeating. According to Ayurveda, there's two kinds of heavy food. Food which is very heavy by nature, and a lot of light food. So those who eat too much can't digest, and then the food becomes poisonous, creates poison, and that creates disease. Prabhupada said too little is okay, but not too much. Better to eat less. Not too less, but if we have to err, better to err on the side of less than more. Anyway, the devotees, because they're engaged in the service of Krishna, they naturally develop this standard of life. Regulated eating, regulated sleeping, Vaikuntha consciousness, not so much anxiety, clean, shuchi. And therefore the devotees appear like they're coming from the spiritual world. Prabhupada saw a picture, he said, angels from Vaikuntha, devotees. Okay, any questions? Oh, I also didn't mention, and because they're brahmachari, brahmachari life means free from anxiety. Free from anxiety. Even Krishna conscious householders are somewhat free from anxiety. But brahmacharis are really free from anxiety. Sometimes they have a little anxiety. Should I get married? But brahmachari life means not much anxiety. Only anxiety for how to serve Krishna. All right, some questions?
Maharaj, even after Kardamuni, having to see the Supreme Lord in front of his eyes and getting his glance, so why he had to enter the married life?
Why did he have to enter married life? He didn't, but he saw that it was Krishna's arrangement. He had some thought that perhaps I should get married. And Krishna arranged for that, that such a qualified person, one of the Mahajans, Swayambhu Manu personally came with this princess, wonderfully qualified daughter. So he took it as Krishna's arrangement. What is that? Yavich chalava santushto dvandvatito vimansa samasitta sitto kripati na Yavich chalava santushto. This is a sign of a devotee. He is satisfied with pain that comes of its own accord. Kardamuni didn't say, man, I've been meditating here for all this time, severe tapasya, what about the girl? I need a wife. Maybe some of the Western girls will come to Vrindavan. I could go there in Kartik and scout around. No. Yadichcha la basantushta. No wife came, he was okay. Wife came, that was okay. Because he was beyond dualities. Yes.
Are there sometimes devotees who are regulated in their eating habits, free from anxiety, and are maintaining cleanliness?
They
are maintaining cleanliness, are clean in their habits.
They're unclean in their habits.
They're clean.
They are clean.
But still they get diseases.
Yeah, because this is the material world. There's no, it's not that, okay, I'm clean, I'm not in anxiety, I don't eat too much, and therefore I'll never get sick. It's the material world. These are material bodies, just like a car. If you keep a car clean, you keep it well maintained, you drive at reasonable speeds, it'll last a long time, but it won't last forever. It won't last forever. It's still a machine. It's still a product of material nature. So it has a beginning and an end, and it's subject to material conditions. So sometimes we, even devotees who are living a clean way of life and regulated and so on, sometimes they also become sick. Often it is due to unnatural life. Air conditioning. You know, you don't eat too much, you're clean, you're healthy, but you're going from the heat of the street into maximum air conditioning, which is the only kind of air conditioning available in India. You know, unnatural conditions. Or sometimes just due to exerting ourselves for Krishna's service, sometimes it's more than the body can handle when we get a little sick. Or sometimes those who are generally regulated, you know, get a little out of regulation sometimes, and that can... We're not... The machinery is not immortal. But it seemed that people who were living a simple way of life, living in villages, living with food that they grow and fresh vegetables, fresh milk, they can live on and on and on. Not forever, but as far as possible. And even in healthy life, we see, you know, in big cities, somebody's 50 and it's like he's spending half of his time with therapies and doctors and pills and all of that. And simple villagers, they've never seen a doctor in their life, they're 80 and they're working every day because of simple life. Something else.
Prabhupada is explaining in the Parapat that because Kardamuni is hearing the transcendental sound of this vibration, that's why compared to other yogis, his health is good. So Prabhupada says that because of that, in our society also we see some devotees are healthy. But I also seen that some devotees struggle with the health, and because of the health they could not continue their chanting. They take help of other the remedial measures. Because of that, they could not give so much time in chanting. And
sometimes it works the opposite way. It's true that sometimes even devotees who are chanting, doing everything, sometimes they have ill health. But generally, even when there's ill health, they go on with their chanting. All right, you know, this, that, let me go on chanting, let me go on serving as far as possible. And others, you know, the first sign of a little irregularity, they want to run to the doctor, they want to try a new diet, they've heard about this therapy or that therapy. And it's all about taking care of the body so that they have no time for chanting. No time for chanting because they're busy looking to do all the things that can make them reasonably healthy so that they can chant. There was one conversation, one of our godbrothers, Yadavara Prabhu, was on a walk with Srila Prabhupada. And I think he was sometimes following some diet. And he'd seen himself that it had become too much, you know, all the devotees are following some diet, and, you know, it's got to be this kind of rice, and it's got to be, oh, no, we don't take this, and we have to take this, and but we don't take that, and this and that. And so that they weren't taking prasadam, practically speaking. You know, they couldn't eat rice, dal, and chapatis because this and this and this and this. And Prabhupada disapproved. Better to die eating prasad. So that's also there, that devotee, he takes care of his body. It's not that he's negligent. It's Krishna's property, so if there's some difficulty, we take care. But not that we become so absorbed in taking care of the body that we can't accomplish the purpose for which we have the body. That we should see. Jiva, what is that? Jiva Syatattva Jigyasa Narata Yastra Karma. We keep body and soul together. That's it. Not extraordinary efforts to... And we see this, that people... There's even a category of books. Books are all in categories. There's novels, there's historical novels, there's romance novels, there's science literature, there's religion, there's different... And one category is called body, mind, and spirit. That's an official category book sets. And basically what those books are about is that they merge the three. It's all about spirituality, which very much depends on your mind, and which is all connected with your body. And therefore, they really devote themselves to the body, but in a natural way. You know, yoga and tai chi and acupuncture and acupressure, and some method and some other method, you know, something that keeps the body just balanced and natural, and because then your mind can be clear, and then you can really feel the spirit. And they actually have no spiritual education, no spiritual understanding. The idea that this body and the spirit are really totally different doesn't really come through. You know, if you're feeling good, if your body's feeling good, your mind's feeling good, then you're in the spiritual world. So in this way, Maya captures them. Maybe some feature of the mode of goodness is there to some extent, so they want to live a natural way of life. Of course, mostly they want to live a natural way of life so that they'll look good, feel young, and really have great sex. You know, the young yogi can find a young yogini. So it's not exactly... And the young yoginis really look like goddesses. He looks like a god. Yeah. Effulgent. She goes, wow, effulgent. Attractive. Naturally attractive. You know, natural soaps and natural clothes. And so you can have natural sense of joy. So a little bit of goodness mixed with the passion. But devotees, they take care of the body, but the body is not the focus. It's just Jiva Syatattva Jigyasa. Something else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So, one of the Prabhupada mentions, like the regulated food habits and sleeping, one can maintain good health. In today's scenario, the college background we are coming from and the food materials available with us. Keeping in that mind, can we practice some morning exercises, yoga?
Can we practice some morning exercises or yoga? The most important morning exercise is dancing in Mangal Arati. Prabhupada said that when we were talking about recreation, is it dancing? But some exercise won't be the end of the world. I don't have much of an opinion about exercises. Yoga. I don't have much to say about it one way or the other. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you are living in Western countries, and in Western countries we see since gratification is the most important thing in their life.
So what's the most important thing?
Sense
gratification. So what prompted you to become Krishna consciousness and
sense gratification doesn't work. Really, it doesn't work. What is that? Vishyendriya samyogad yatad agre amritotama. The happiness that comes from sense gratification is just like nectar in the beginning. Pariname vishamila. And at the end, it's just like poison. Tatsukam rajasam smritam. That's happiness in the mode of passion. The passionate Western or Indian, doesn't matter, but passionate life dedicated to sense gratification results in misery. Radasastu palam dukkha. So it doesn't work. Even if you think, no, it works, it has a beginning and an end, so it doesn't work. But even before it reaches the end, it's already sour. Otherwise, America would be full of blissful souls. And the face is the index of mind. We know that they're not blissful souls, they're miserable. America, Europe. You have sense gratification. You know, you want it. You swipe your credit card, and it's on your doorstep. The next morning at the latest. Whatever it is you want. So everybody's just in ecstasy. No, you're miserable. Sense gratification doesn't work. That's the secret. Yes.
Maharaj, could you say a few words on cultivating a relationship with Srila Prabhupada's books, especially as you've done over so many years?
A few words about cultivating a relationship. Well, a relationship with books is cultivated by reading them. They cultivate a relationship with cows by petting them and feeding them and milking them and so on. And books, you read them. And then you discuss them. Even now there are social media sites just dedicated to discussions about books. But you don't need social media. You sit down with other devotees and discuss. And then speak about what you've read to others who are not reading the books and distribute the books. Read them, and other people, they illustrate them, they produce them, they come up with ideas for new ones. Keep the accounts for the books, manage the distribution. So they're also related. Finally, actually, everyone should be related to the books. Our whole movement is book related. We're coming in the Brahma Sampradaya. Brahma means learning. so books. So we have temples, but the temples mean we use them as places to distribute the knowledge of the books, we live according to the books. So the temple is all about books. And even if we didn't have temples, we can make do with houses or apartments or empty stores or any place under a tree. We'll do the same thing. We'll follow what we've heard in the books, we'll read the books, we'll discuss the books. Then our life, our way of life individually is based on the books, our eating, our thinking, our work, what we do, what we don't do, our social choices, what is that? Sangat Sanjayate Kama, to associate with the devotees. Sangha Tyaga Sitovita. Our social choices come from the books. We marry, and whether we marry has to do with the books. Accepting a spiritual master. Who we accept as a spiritual master, that's on the basis of the books. What happens to us at the time of death, when everything is tested, that's on the basis of the books. So the whole thing is book connected. Is that okay? Just be loud. Prabhupada mentions about the same thing differently at different places. Yes.
So how to understand that?
He's a person. People talk about different, the same thing differently at different places.
So how to know what is the actual?
How to know what the actual thing is? One thing is that the main thing is Prabhupada talks about the same way all the time. It's not in some places he says chant Hare Krishna, and other places, well, Shiva Nam is okay.
Not like essential to us be same.
Your microphone is not actually turned on.
Like moon landing, Prabhupada told that.
Moon landing, Prabhupada's looking at it from different angles of vision. Sometimes he says they didn't go. Sometimes he says, even if they went, what is the use?
So how do you understand whether they went or not?
How do we understand that they went or didn't go? Well, you can try and go yourself. You have to read and see what Prabhupada's arguments are. Why is he saying they didn't go? That's the thing. What kind of planet is the moon? And how are these meat eaters, drunkards, woman hunters going to the moon? That's Prabhupada's basic argument. And sometimes he says even, you know, to go to America, you need a visa, but to go to the moon, you'll just get in. No restrictions. He points out four defects, tendency to make mistakes, tendency to cheat. Points out that they went, and then they never went back. Very suspicious. And that was, Prabhupada made that argument, like, no later than 1977. And if the moon is that they went, why aren't they going back? Now it's 2016. When was the last time they went to the moon?
69.
No, 1969? No, it was later than that. In the 70s sometimes. Certainly no later than the early 80s was the last time. And I grew up in the time when there was a race for space, and the moon was like, this was the greatest achievement in the history of all mankind. That we were going to go to the moon. America was going to go to the moon. And we had to be there before the Russians. It was like crucial. And President Kennedy announced that we would land the moon, a man on the moon in this century or this decade, whatever it was, this decade. So, you know, it was the crowning achievement of evolution, human evolution, to go to the moon. And it had military importance, because if our enemies were to, you know, what could you do if you had a military base on the moon? And what could your enemies do if they had a military base on the moon? So it was, militarily it was crucial. There were all these ideas about economic development, things that you could, you know, do in the atmosphere of weightlessness, and who knows what valuable minerals might be on the moon. Even as a tourist destination, you know, how much could you make sending people to the moon? You know, huge, you know, there was no limit to the people's imaginations, what the moon could be about. Yeah, imagine the moon. It's like owning, like if I said, how would you like to own all of Bombay? Yeah, it's beyond your dreams. But here was the opportunity to actually go to the moon and colonize the moon. You know, Columbus went to America, imagine, the moon. And then we go. And then for the next 30 years, we just say, eh. You know, I think we should go to Mars. Something doesn't seem right there.
Maharaj, something similar to Prabhuji's question. So Prabhupada also talks in different places differently about the origin of the jiva.
So this question is related to Prabhuji's question. So similarly, Prabhupada also talks in different places differently about the origin of the jiva.
The jiva comes from the moon then? What?
Jiva is from a spiritual world or not? Or where is the jiva from actually?
Jiva is from Krishna.
Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that okay, one who comes back to me, he never goes back.
Yeah.
So sometimes, I mean, sometimes Prabhupada says that yes, you know, we were in spiritual world, and somehow we had a fable, and we chose to enjoy.
The main thing he says is, don't try to figure it out. Somehow, you may have come from here, you may have come from there. Here you are. Probably like a man drowning in the ocean. Somebody drops him, you know, a life preserver, or, you know, a lifeline. And he says, well, wait a second, how long have I been in the ocean? How did I fall in the ocean? Grab the line. No, this is an important question. Just grab it and go. Then you can discuss.
Krishna, thank you very much for the class. How do we purify the lower modes that are present in
this? Excuse me, if you want an authoritative answer about where the jiva comes, falls from Faridabad. Faridabad.
Maharaj, how do we purify the lower modes that are present? Because while practicing emotional service, these lower modes, because of which we are not able to practice properly, so how do we purify the lower modes?
I'm sorry, Kieran.
How do we purify the lower modes that are present in us, which...
Tadā rājas tamo bhāva kāma lobhāni asciye cheva etaya anādhitam sitam sattve pusīt nityam bhāgavata-seva. Regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving pure devotee, that will do it.
on the principle
of Lord is a Bhavagrahi, he sees the essence, we avoid externals, like cleanliness and something that thing. So can you verify?
repeat.
Lord is Bhavagrahi, Lord sees the essence of everything.
Bhavagrahi. The Lord sees the essence
sometimes
of everything.
I am not shared or properly or
yeah, that Krishna sees the heart, but Krishna's not a fool. It's just like the spiritual master, he sees the heart of the disciple. But it's a simple thing. I told him to keep a clean face, and he's wearing a beard. I told him to chant 16 rounds, he's chanting 4. I told him to follow 4 rules, he's following 3. And now he's Bhavagrahi. It's not just sentiment. It's all about the heart. It is all about the heart, but heart means you do something. What is that in Nectar instruction, that Krishna consciousness is not imaginative ecstasy? Sentimental speculation or imaginative ecstasy. It's practical activity in the service of the Lord. It's not just that feeling. It is about feeling, but if you feel something, you know, like, I love my country. Well, we're under attack. I love my country. We need you in the army. I love my country. If you love your country, you'll do something. Not that you just sit there and love. If we love the spiritual master, then we'll follow the instructions of the spiritual master. If we're serious about Krishna consciousness, developing Krishna consciousness, we'll accept the things favorable and reject the things unfavorable. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, if you fall in the muck and die, then Krishna looks and says, oh, he's dirty. But your natural way of life is cleanliness, truthfulness, Krishna consciousness. Then, not that you can't cheat Krishna. Krishna's not a fool. That you do everything rubbish, and then you say, but it's the heart that counts. Okay. Shall we stop here? Yes. No?
Sometimes intellectually we get convinced, but our heart is not ready to accept that thing. How to deal with this?
Then
situation?
We associate with the devotees who have stronger faith than we do. And we continue to read, and you know, we're intellectually convinced, so we become intellectually more convinced. And we make it practical. I'm intellectually convinced of something, but I don't see it in action. When I see it in action, I become practically convinced. So by preaching activities, the philosophy becomes manifest. You know, I'm intellectually convinced that some people are godly, some are demonic. But when I go out and try to spread Krishna consciousness, the differences become apparent. And so many other things. When we try to apply Krishna consciousness, it's not just a theoretical philosophy. But when we apply it in our lives, then we get greater realization of what's what. And especially when we do that in the association of devotees. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Sometimes we get inspired by the great souls, like Srila Prabhupada, who were actually very in ecstasy. They were serving their spiritual master, and they were in the extent they were serving Krishna, and they were going externals, and they were not the externals were not affecting them. So we also sometimes hearing their pastimes, reading about them in Lilamrita or something, we get inspired. But actually we understand that we cannot imitate them, but how can we follow them, how can we follow that mood? How can we not imitate them, but just follow their, get inspired by them?
Do as much as you can do. Do more than you can do. The devotees, it's not that Prabhupada did extraordinary things and all you can do is read about it. You can participate. The distribution of literature is one practical example. That you can go out and distribute more and more and more and more books. It's not that, because you're not Prabhupada or you're not Rupa Goswami, you can't go out there and do it. You can. Or here you have an Echo Village project. So it's not that you say, well, I'm not Prabhupada, so I can't do anything. Do something. Do the maximum, as much as you can do. Even Prabhupada said he'd be happy if his disciples surpassed him. We don't think we can surpass him. But sometimes devotees, Prabhupada, whatever you do, it's Prabhupada's credit. Sometimes devotees ask, could we have more than one article by you and back to Godhead? And Prabhupada allowed that they could just one. And then he said, okay, this Prabhupada speaks out, you can have that but one page more. Not more than that. And then Prabhupada said, actually all the articles are written by me. I said, they should just be divided up under different names. It's not that Prabhupada's activities are limited to the specific things he did in his lifetime. The things that you do to serve Prabhupada are also part of Prabhupada's activities, Prabhupada's glories, Prabhupada's credit.
It is written in Bhagavatam that Bhagavatam is the answer to all the questions. So if while reading Bhagavatam we get some doubts, so what should we do? We should ask or we should just continue reading and wait for the answers to come?
I don't know. You go on reading. It's not that... Yes. All the questions are answered. You read them, but reading is, we're active readers. We don't just read, we discuss. Just like someone says, the answers are all in the textbook. But if you don't get the answer, then you discuss with the professors or you discuss with the other students. I didn't see when the answers become apparent. And again, by serving the book, Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya, by serving the book and by serving the devotees, the answers come out. It's not just a textbook or limited text where you read it and okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. There's unlimited meaning and unlimited value, unlimited answers in every word of Srimad Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. But that has to be realized. How's that realized? By devotional service. By serving the book, or by serving the two kinds of Bhagavatams, the book Bhagavatam and person Bhagavatam. Okay. Who runs the show here? When should I stop? I think we're getting to be about time for stopping, but yeah? Okay. I think we can stop here. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Praise to you.